satellite ones, but they're metric ones. And this comes from problems in optimal control. So short overview, I will first recall what the classical linear control problems is and what's the difference to robust control problems is. Then I will talk about optimal versus suboptimal H-infinity control. I will tell you a little bit about current numerical methods and why I don't like them, and some of the numerical difficulties that these methods have, and some remedies, and hopefully I get to the numerical examples. So, the problem of with classical linear control, so you have a linear system, x dot equals ax plus bu, and an output, y equals cx plus du, plus an initial value. X is a state, y is a u is a control, y is the output. And typical tasks are, given the system is in a certain position, try to bring it back into stable equilibrium, or following a reference trajectory, or to optimal control. So, in the engineering community, the approach is typically to put everything in frequency domain, so you do a Laplace transformation, this gives you the Laplace transform variables, and then you get a nice mapping between the inputs and the outputs given by this transfer function, f of s. And the infinity norm in this set of matrix rational matrix valued function is given by the supremum on the imaginary taken over all the maximum singular values on the imaginary axis. So that's the norm. Just to get the setting. So why is one interested in robust control? Now, most realistic problems are typically nonlinear or linearizations or realizations of nonlinear problems. Since we always do simplifications, there are modeling or simplification errors. Typically, the data that are in the system are measurements, or the system comes from a discretization of some infinite dimensional partial differential equation. And so these are only approximations to an operator. And also, typically, models are noisy because you have noise everywhere. So, what's the setting of linear robust control? So, you just essentially stick in a new term, W, which essentially takes care of all the dirt. So, you have your linear system, and the W is taking care of the noise, linearization error, unmodeled parts of the system. And you also distinguish two types of output, measured outputs. So you have some devices, some sensors in your system, which you can measure, and then some outputs which you take the information and feed back into the system to control it. So the setting is essentially the same. In principle, I could put these two together and W and U together, and have a classical linear problem as before. But I now want to distinguish these, and W is the noise. And there's some data about the sizes of that those systems that are not so important. So what's the objective of optimal control, optimal H-infinity control? So it's essentially you design a controller which takes some of the outputs, you feed those in the controller, it designs an input to your system G of S so that your noise and your measured outputs that you get out of the system, that's the part that you really don't know, and that's the part which you want to be nice. So that is controlled in such a way that typically, for example, the system is internally stable, which means if you turn the noise off, then it becomes a stable system. and that this mapping between the W and the V in the H infinity norm, that norm is minimized. So that the influence of the noise or the dirt or the modeling errors on your output is somehow suppressed as much as it's possible. So that's the basic idea of Grober's control. And this is a already pretty awful formula for the closed loop system that you build from this. So it's not that so important to look at this. So now, so you want to minimize the transfer function subject to the condition that your system is stable when you turn off the noise. That's the idea. And that's a pretty difficult optimization problem. It's actually typically nonlinear, non-smooth optimization over a lot of parameters. So it's usually difficult to get this. And when you design the controller in such a way, it's often also very sensitive to small perturbations. So that is, first of all, difficult to do, even though we have nice non-smooth optimization methods nowadays, much better than we could think of many years ago, but still, this is a task. So, like in the 80s, the idea came up to say, okay, let's forget this problem. Let's look at an alternative problem. Let's say I fix myself a parameter gamma, and I design a controller so that the transfer function in H infinity norm is less than gamma. So if I'm able to do that, then I can then take the gamma and reduce it. I make it smaller and smaller, and try to, in this way, to get to a control. In general, this may not be optimal, because it's something you embed it into a problem. But it's a very good method, and there's a lot of stuff about it. I mean, there's two very nice. Books in the literature, Green and Weinbier, Zudal, Glover, and also recently Hautes and Storfogel. And there's numerical methods for this suboptimal H infinity control in MATLAB control and Grober's control toolbox, and also in the Schweikart library. You can also embed this problem into a linear matrix inequality and use semi-definite programming. So this problem, not the other one. But there's some problems. When you come near to the optimal solution, these methods often fail. And the controllers that you design in that way are often very sensitive, and furthermore, the suboptimal controllers are not unique. So there's many possible choices for designing such a controller. So what you want to do is look at the methods. And that's where we come into the eigenvalue problems. I just put a few assumptions in here. You don't have to really digest these, but those who know the control stuff know that these assumptions are needed. And under these assumptions, and a little bit with no more notation, so I introduced two matrices R, which are functions of gamma. So they're built from the matrix, the data, D11 and D are the matrices from the linear robust control setting. And I just look at this shifted by a diagonal plus zero matrix times gamma. And I need a parameter gamma hat, which is the largest value for which R of gamma is singular. And there are two of these matrices, one with an H and one with a J. So what does it all give us? So under these assumptions here, we have the following suboptimal H infinity control problem. This is a solution. So under these assumptions, there exists internally stabilizing controller such that the transfer function from W to Z satisfies that the norm in H infinity to the norm is less than gamma, if and only four conditions hold. First of all, gamma is bigger than this gamma hat here, which is the maximum of the two. Second of all, there exists a solution, a positive semi-definite solution of a Riccati equation associated with this Hamiltonian matrix. I've written it not in the usual Hamiltonian matrix sense, but I split already the two parts. So there's the gamma, everything else is constant. So the gamma, R of gamma, is only in here, and in contrast to Leber's Riccati equation and Hamiltonian matrix, I don't multiply by I. So there's this is the one Hamiltonian matrix Riccati equation, and there's another one, J, looks similar, just from different data. And the first condition is that gamma squared is bigger than the spectral radius of the product of the two Riccati equations, solutions. So that immediately tells you a method how you can compute the optimal, suboptimal H infinity. You take your gamma, you compute the two Riccati solutions, you take their product, you compute the spectral radius, and then you let gamma wander until one of these conditions is failed. And that's the classical method that is implemented in codes. So gamma up is one of the largest gamma for which one of these conditions holds. That's Doyle and Glover and lots of other names associated with that. So the following approaches. So there is an embedding in linear matrix inequalities, and you can use semi-definite programming, but you get a nice complexity order here. It's polynomial time, yeah. So I don't think it's feasible at this stage for reasonably large problems. So you can use what I just said. You can solve the Riccati equations and use then the one-dimensional optimization of a gamma that gets you in the order of n to the 4 because the Riccati equations and cubed. And Gainé and Laub in the end of the 90s said, okay, Riccati equations is bad. I totally agree with that. I mean, you should rather find subspaces of Hamiltonian matrices. And they embedded it, but the Riccati equations are still there because you need the spectral radius of the product. And then they even improved it even more by putting it into generalized eigenvalue. And what I'm telling you is in the lines of that. So let me give you an explicit example. So it's not so important to look at the data, but if you look at this data from this matrix, then one of the Riccati solutions is always zero. The other, if gamma gets to the optimal gamma, which is 1/2 in this case, the Riccati solution converges to infinity. The two matrices RH and RJ, which you need to form the Hamiltonian matrices, become singular. So if the Hamiltonian matrix can't even be defined. But the fourth condition in the theorem is always valid. So that should tell us, I mean, if you go via the Riccati equation or via these Hamiltonian matrices, that near the solution you will have trouble. And that's exactly what happens. So we have the following difficulties. So the Riccati solvers often fail before you even reach the optimal range, the suboptimal range, and the remedy is avoid Riccati equations. Some people may not like that, but I think it's the only way to go. Forming the Hamiltonian matrices may also be a problem. So that means avoid Hamiltonian matrices, which is something I don't like myself, but there are nice matrix pencils that you can embed the stuff in, they are symmetric, skew symmetric, or as Steve would call them, odd even. And even the Riccati solvers and even the eigensolvers tend to fail when the eigenvalues come close to the imaginary axis, and unfortunately, that's typically what happens when you reach the optimal gamma. So you follow the eigenvalues until they hit the imaginary axis, and that's where the solvers and the thing is use structured eigensolvers, which have a perturbation theory on the axis. And the last thing is the sensitivity of the optimal controllers comes from the fact that you invert some matrices, and if you implement them as BAEs rather than ODEs, then also that problem goes away. So let me quickly give you a tour through what you can do to get this. So the first thing is, if you have a Riccati equation, there's an Hamiltonian eigenvalue problem associated with it, and the Riccati equation, so you take your Hamiltonian matrix and find a Lagrange subspace corresponding to the eigenvalues in the left half plane, and then the Riccati solution is just this times this inverse. But you don't need the Riccati solution. So here's a version of the theorem. You just take the Riccati equations out and replace it by Hamiltonian matrices. That's the first, would be the first step. Then you still have the problem with the purely imaginary eigenvalues on when you reach the optimal gamma, and that Lagrange subspace approach actually can, in theory, be carried out even if the eigenvalues hit the imaginary axis. We're just doing the perturbation analysis, which is a bit tricky on the imaginary axis, because generically for this problem the eigenvalues form a Jordan block. So in contrast to the usual situation, the generic situation is a Jordan block, and if you do structured perturbation it doesn't break. But if you do non-structured perturbation it does break. So that's one of the reasons why we and Leber and Andrew Run in 87, they gave the perturbation analysis, although in a completely different notation and in a completely different setting, but they proved that structure-preserving meshes is necessary, even though they don't say that. And we can actually completely parameterize all Lagrange subspaces for eigenvalues for Hamiltonian matrices with eigenvalues on the imaginary axis. So that there is a way out. Now there's still the spectral radius condition in this theorem, which says you need the spectral radius of the product of the two Riccati equations. Okay, that's easy to get rid of. So you take the two Lagrange subspaces, suppose you have computed them, and you form this matrix, which is a symmetric matrix in gamma, and a matrix function in gamma. And actually the point when the spectral radius condition is satisfied is when you have a root, an eigenvalue of this matrix goes to zero. So this is, so you can replace the spectral radius condition by finding, taking a symmetric matrix depending on one parameter and finding when it becomes singular. And that you can actually do because Lagrange subspaces are nice. And you can use the CFC composition to, so if you have such a Lagrange subspace, you can do a CFC composition of C as cosines, S as sines, C squared plus S squared is the identity of the blocks. So you don't even have to form these products. You just look at the CS and look at the Cs and the Ss and look whether some zeros occur there. So you just have to check this matrix, which is formed from the C's and the S's and the unitary factor. So that part is also nice. So we have a new H-infinity test. So if the assumptions hold, we can detect this condition via rank change in the matrix Y of gamma. We check the semi-definiteness, and we could check the semi-definiteness of these. We cannot check the semi-definiteness of these two and that because the H's goes to infinity, but the rank check via the CS decomposition is still a problem checking ranks, but a lot easier to check the singular values of a symmetric matrix than first taking the product and then checking the spectral radius of a non-symmetric matrix. And you can actually just have to check the rank of this product of the C's and the S's in the CS decomposition. Okay, so, but still, there's the inversion of the R matrices. So forming the Hamiltonian is still a problem, because as our example shows, they become singular. Now, you can look at it, at the formula, and everybody who is in this community would immediately see it's a Schur complement. So if you have a Schur complement with something which gets singular in the inverse, get rid of the Schur complement, put it back into a pencil. And this is indeed how the two matrix pencils that come. And they're symmetric and skew symmetric. They form an even pencil. So then we should design a method. Yes, you could do that. Actually, true. Yeah. Exactly. And so these embedded pencils have a nice properties. They have Hamiltonian eigensymmetry. Have a complete theory about the canonical forms for this by Christian Mayl, and we have some structured methods to work with this. And we can actually know what the index and everything is. And the basic bisection procedure is now as follows. You form these two pens, symmetric, skew symmetric pencils, use a variation that was designed of the method that was designed for Hamiltonian and skew Hamiltonian pencils, because it's just essentially a resorting of the matrices to compute the subspaces corresponding to the eigenvalues in the left half plane and detect when this is not n-dimensional anymore, because if it's not n-dimensional anymore, either you hit the imaginary axis or an eigenvalue goes to infinity. And you bisect, essentially, with respect to that procedure. So if the dimension of one of these subspaces is less than n, then we are below the optimal gamma, and we can bisect upward. And otherwise, we do the CS decomposition. We check this rank condition, and if this is the case, then we just bisect upward, and otherwise we bisect down. Classical bisection. You can also do higher order methods, like secant type methods to do this. I'm going to skip this. I just want to show you a numerical example. So here's an example. If you plot the eigenvalues, the plot looks like this. So here's a small eigenvalue, which is not responsible for the rank change, but there's another one coming in here, which was the second one, and that is the one which then finally is responsible for the rank change. And so it's not the smallest eigenvalue which is responsible for the bad gamma. It may be some other one which comes from above and crosses. And the other example is this explicit example. This is a special set of parameters. If you stick that into the MATLAB toolbox, H-inf opt, it will not get a solution. because we can't inform the Hamiltonians. And it will be it will stop very far from the optimal gamma. And you can see what happens. These are the non-zero eigenvalues as a function of gamma. So one of them grows and then comes back in, and the other one falls. But it's a pretty nasty example. And let me end my talk with some funny observation. And this is a real question which I don't understand. So if you keep going, so we usually stop the gamma when we found the optimal gamma. Now you decrease the gamma further. Then you get into the range where the eigenvalues hit the imaginary axis, the Riccati equations don't exist anymore, the Lagrange subspaces stop to exist. But you say, keep going. And all of a sudden, the eigenvalues drop off from the imaginary axis again. The Riccati equation solutions exist again. The Lagrange subspaces exist again. Everything's nice. And at least numerically, we can't prove that, but at least numerically, the transfer function stays the same. So that minimum is reached, so you come in flat into the minimum, and you stay on the minimum, and all of a sudden there are new regions in the gamma spectrum which you can take. And still there are reasonable solutions. You can implement that control as everything's nice. It's stable. It has the same minimum. And we really don't know. The theory in the books essentially stops when you hit the first time when nothing works anymore. And it's also difficult to find these regions because you have to go step by step looking through the whole gamma axis. And we really don't understand what's going on here, what is the right way to look at it. My intuition is that the set of optimal minimal transfer function is pretty big. And the parameterization via gamma is probably not the right thing in that regime, in that range. So somehow a global non-smooth optimization problem would maybe find something else. And so let me conclude. Once the software is completed, we have resolved some of the potential difficulties in current numerical methods for suboptimal H infinity control. We avoid Riccati equations, first message. I say we plan to use structured preserving methods, they're not completely ready. And we have a quadratically convergent method, I didn't talk about that. We have some convincing numerical examples that this is a lot better than what's currently available in the literature, but a lot more needs to be done.
Take a question, sir.